just give it, give it, just give it, give it, Vaughn P. She may already know my name. Well, if she don't, I'm lame. I seen them on the train, get back shirt. Went over to her like I knew her, saying this might work. With the maneuver type maneuver, honey, this might hurt. I told her, you know, P. She said, oh yeah, you see. And I could listen to your mission, but I'm no groupie. Too bad that you cute, P, cause I don't be dating rappers. I said, no, I'm a beat maker, I get paid faster.
Surely you'll break my heart, but I'll be there beside you.
She said, don't break my heart.
Welcome to Bedroom Beethoven's episode number 24. Hope you all have been having a good summer. Meat on the grill, waves splashing in the pool, time spent with friends and loved ones, and of course, ample podcast listening. You're tuned into Bedroom Beethoven's, and I know there's a million podcasts out there. So if you stumbled upon this one, or you subscribed and you listen, hey, thanks so much. I found that when people are talking about something they're passionate about, the content is always good. It's important to examine that as an artist. It's important to look at the things you love and the art that you think is complete shit. And if you cultivate that part of your brain, you find your own taste. So let's take things apart together without picking at a scab. Let's drill down, find base level motivations for why people get into this business. My guest this week is Vaughn P, production extraordinaire and one half of Tanya Morgan. You might know him as Vaughn P from Vaughn P and the Other Guys, veteran of the game, master of his craft. And we take it back and run the full spectrum from growing up in New York all the way to producing Don Will's latest album, which comes out this week. But check it out. Before we get to the conversation at hand, please visit bedroombeethovens.com. There you'll find a nice little website that has all the episodes neatly displayed, as well as the other outlets such as YouTube, Twitter, and Instagram. I also have a Patreon. You can search that, patreon.com at bedroombeethovens, if you want to show your support financially. But all that aside, I'm just happy to be here talking with one of music's greats. Let's get into it. As always, I am your host, Cello, and Lamont Lander's band will tell you what podcast this is.
It's the Bedroom Beethoven Podcast.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing right in life, man, to get people of your caliber on my show, man, but I appreciate you coming on.
It's happy to be here, man. I was checking it out earlier and just was listening to, which one was I listening to earlier? The Trommy one. Man, this guy heard they reminisced over you kind of late. I might have to cancel. I'm joking.
No, don't worry. You personally, one of my favorite tracks is from P's Gotta Have It, starting with that Guru sample on New Pair. And that was before it's before I even knew you were a member of Tanya Morgan, which I'm sure is unusual. Mm-hmm. Like, I listened to Tanya, I was a fan, but then I listened to you and became a fan. And then I put the pieces together like a year later, like, oh shit, I didn't know he was actually a part of the group because I was just casually listening to both. And it's funny because, you know, every time I listen to that track, Guru was notorious for getting.
Oh, wait, you said New Pair?
Yeah, from 2010.
Oh, that's actually funny enough. That's Fresh Prince.
Oh, well, doesn't it open with the Guru sample? No,
he kind of does sound like it because, like, he normally don't rap in that register. But no, that's Fresh Prince.
Oh, it's my, like, God.
He's in that register with sound. It does sound like Guru.
Well, now I feel like a fool. But
he does sound that he sounds totally different on that song than any other song he's done.
Yeah, I got on sneaks, but I need a new pair. Yeah.
Did you see that video of Will Smith and Jazzy Jeff rehearsing recently?
I didn't get to click on it, but I did see it. But I have to see that.
I know people think it's corny, but man, Fresh Prince, he still has bars, man.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Him, like, they, And the funny thing is the way talent is passed down, because his son and his daughter are both dope. Jeff's son is super dope. He can sing and rap. It's like they just passing the talent down. It just keeps going. It's just in the family.
Yeah. And sometimes I have to stop myself. Like, if, you know, if you don't talk about guns, drugs, and women, then you're automatically talking about trees, incense, and saving the world. Like, yeah. You know, High Tech has, you know, he's this conscious producer, but then he, you know, if he goes and does a beat for 50, well, then now he's a street producer. And like, I'll admit I'm terrible at labeling people and I'm trying to break mm-hmm. out of it. And it's like, man, I forgot that Fresh Prince, I mean, he can rap, you know, he might be like, you know, he doesn't curse in his raps, and Jazzy Jeff might be this and that, but I mean, they still got it.
See, the reason I had, with that album, P's Gotta Have It, was me, I was trying to check off the bucket list of when I was in high school, I wanted to do a certain kind of album. And, you know, I would just be doodling in my notebook is what I wanted to do and how I wanted it to sound and who I wanted on it. And with P's Gotta Have It, I'm like, I still have this high school bucket list thing that I want to do. And one of the first artists I grew up on, because I was born in 81, so my entries in were a little different, where I came in where the people I could listen to were kid rappers like Criss Cross or safe, quote-unquote safe people like Fresh Prince. So those were the first people I heard, and through there, it just so happened that, you know, he was this, like I said, quote-unquote safe, fun rapper dude. Nothing wrong with being safe or fun, but he had this incredible DJ. So that was my intro into just the full skills of hip hop and what you can do within it. Because, you know, he had the novelty song, like, I Think I Can Beat Mike Tyson. And a lot of the things I reference on P's Gotta Have It are like my entry points. Like, I reference Tribe, of course. I reference De La. I had the artist that did De La Soul Is Dead's artwork. I had him do my art. And now I even have the cheerleader tattoo. I have the cheerleader that's on the cover of P's Gotta Have It. I even got that tatted on me now. Like, it was a real special record to me, and I was trying to hit all my all my influences growing up. And I had to figure out a way to incorporate Jeff and Fresh Prince in there too.
But first, I had Nicolay from the Foreign Exchange on like a couple episodes ago, and we talked about how you were the other group that came out of that whole OK Player thing. So, you know, I had to reach out because me and him, we spent a good amount of time just reminiscing how like cool it was, not only because, you know, you have this social platform for music, which aren't really around anymore, but it was a cool way just to get people together. And of course, mm-hmm. the more outlets there are for independent artists of all kind, it's a win. And that's kind of what I was hoping to do with this podcast. So I had to get you on. Yeah. I'm glad you came on.
Man, I appreciate it. And happy to be here.
Yeah. For real. Yeah. You guys have been around so long. Like, you've been able to, well, you know, you use the internet as your entry point, but marketing a group or a rapper online wasn't necessarily how people were doing it. It was more BET and MTV. So, you know, how has that been? Because, you know, you get what you pay for was kind of released at the beginning of streaming culture. And now it's full blown. Are people really less appreciative now, you think? And like, cause we have Tidal and Spotify and it's the attention economy, you know?
I think it's more appreciative because you hear this so much. People, I don't even want to say complaining, but just overwhelmed at the amount of entertainment they have. You know, I don't really hear so much as, you know, I'll listen to that when I get to it. It's more like, I wish I was in that vibe right now. I wish I was in the mood to hear, you know, this, and then turn around and hear, like, Dreamville came out with their compilation, and it's a certain, like, listening to the Dreamville compilation reminded me a lot of just my crew, Lessendary, and even... Like, they're bringing up Nicolay back to like Justice League era when they would have like, you know, their songs about, you know, be the nicest, this and that, over boom bap tracks, and then would have like the playful, silly records. Playing no games, no dress. I got an idea. Let's shoot wild night in my hood, y'all get right here. Got me a war nominated before me. Let the AK spray straight before me. That's a monologue talking to the motherfucker ordinance. They got a song like talking about robbing the Wells Fargo and took with a bazooka or whatever, And it's like just those playful moments in the studio making it to the album.
So you're okay with someone who just listens to maybe a handful of songs rather than a person who will maybe buy the vinyl, sit down, put headphones on, and become fully immersed with the full body of work the way you intended it to?
You know what's funny? This probably sounds, you know, pretentious or arrogant, and I don't even care. I think if you miss out on the complete project, it's not for me to boohoo over. You missed out on some cool stuff by just skipping around. So I'm cool with you skipping around. Get what you came for. If you just like this song and that song, that's cool. But you missed other little things. And the same goes for me as a listener. There are things that I may have liked. Even me being an album artist, there are other people's albums. It might be, you know, I might be listening to Kendrick Damn, and I went through it one time and decided I like DNA and Duckworth and Love and whatever, but I may have missed the concept. And that's because I didn't give it enough time to catch the full concept until later. And like you catch it later, it takes on another life. But you know, if you miss it, then that's something that you missed. It's not like I failed. You know what I mean? I didn't fail as an artist. You missed out on, you missed the overall arch of it. And it's like, you'll catch it later. And it's not even that it's so much that it's so important that you get the whole thing. If you got it and didn't care, maybe you caught it the first time. It's like, okay, that's cool. You know, I'm not trying to say it like, oh, your life was going to change if you would have caught the whole. Like a good example is, you know, Don's record is coming out on the 19th. But I also have a record, and he had mine for a while. We finished my record before we did his, and he just was like, man, I just caught the concept to this song. Ah, that concept is so dope. And I know for a fact he's played my album at least 10 times. But sometimes you just catch stuff later. So a lot of times we'll sit back and we'll be so into our concept of what we're trying to do. And then when people don't catch it right then and there, we get discouraged, and we shouldn't. You should tell yourself they didn't catch it yet more than, ah, nobody cares because I came out and then Beyonce dropped a surprise album. Nobody cares. Nah, if you really set out to do something that can stand the test of time, then they should be able to catch it next year and the year after that and the year after that. It don't have to be, it comes out that Friday and it was just too much going on, so they missed it.
That's why I like the whole vinyl comeback, because I heard the argument that it's just back for aesthetic reasons, but I think you touched on the two main points. One, if I'm just streaming, I don't own the music. I always have it. It doesn't go away. And then number two, it really forces me to listen in sequence. I can't pause. I can't really rewind. I can't skip tracks. And then, you know, I'll even add a little bonus because I'm a collector. It's like, I got a Big Crit vinyl. I got that signed. I got a Kendrick Lamar signed. I got a lyric book by Sky Zoo that he signed. You know, it's just, you can send him an email and be like, hey, man, you know, this isn't going to go on eBay. I love the music. I'm about to buy the vinyl. Can you sign it? And you get like these little mementos.
You know what's crazy about that? I was talking to my aunt. My aunt said when they were growing up, they would throw parties. The record would go off. And the party would stop and they would put on another record. And it's like, yeah, they would play it. I guess it would be more like a kickback now, because they didn't have like the DJ with the Gemini mixer with the smooth transitions. They would throw the record on and play side A, which the upbeat songs were on side A most of the time. And then like, okay, we're going to stop and put on another record. And they sitting there listening to the whole side A. Chilling, drinking, we know whatever they was doing in the 70s. You know, it's just crazy to think that, you know, things just, they go in waves, and now it's coming back, because I've been to friends' houses now where it'll be a kickback and they'll pull out, you know, Like's album. Like from Pac Div put out his vinyl and just let it play. And we were chilling just playing his whole album. It wasn't a playlist, you know what I mean? It was just listening to a whole piece of vinyl.
No, that's dope. And then I guess the circumstances around an album like Rubber Souls that received a good number of streams. I mean, if you reissued it on vinyl during this resurgence, if you want to call it that, it could be a winner in the sales department 6-7 years later. The industry's funny.
I think we have some left because we did press that. I only have that on vinyl.
We're living in the Matrix where I just feel like, you know, I don't know how I feel about it. Like the name of this podcast is Bedroom Beethoven. So I'm embracing that idea where, you know, Madlib can make an album on an iPad. But not too long ago, there was a time where nobody made music on a computer. And I really thought that Rubber Souls was like, it came out at the wrong time, and now you could capitalize on it on vinyl years later. So if you did press it, how was the reaction? Was it favorable?
I don't even know, to tell you the truth. I think because when we put Rubber, okay, so the album, as far as our actual albums, the only one that's not on vinyl at this point is You Get What You Pay For. And we may end up reissuing that sometime next year or something like that. But so Moonlighting had, we always came out either a little too late or a little too early, because Moonlighting, we were at the very end of like the real Fat Beats era of your album is coming out on, you know, you got 1,000 pieces of vinyl made and you got 10,000 CDs made. So we came out on the end of that, and we have like, there's probably still a storage room somewhere with Moonlighting vinyls. It's like we just had so many Moonlighting vinyls at the time. Then we didn't make one for Brooklyn Addy because we made so many with Moonlighting, so we didn't do one until now. And then we switched over to labels, and we did Rubber Souls totally different. We did bring in, it was still, you know, software based. Sixth Sense produced the whole thing. But he also brought in his MPC. He also brought in a lot of live instruments and stuff. And that one was on vinyl. And that's when streaming really picked up. Because I remember we were disappointed that the streams were really high, but the physical wasn't. Because we, you know, it was just becoming that. So that wasn't, we didn't view it as a good thing at the time. And retrospect, yeah, it's awesome that the streaming was pretty good. But we were like, well, you know, it's that first week, if so many people just streamed it, why didn't they go buy the CDs? Because it was changing. We got CDs. We got these CDs. So,
yeah,
I don't even know, to be honest.
Well, nonetheless, man, just, you know, congrats on 10 years of Brooklyn Addy. Congrats on all the music. It's just it seems like just a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Like it and that being able to look back at that and be outside of it and realize it was an era of time. We did a show where it was, we were on tour with Wale, and J. Cole and Big Sean opened up for us. And it's crazy to think about now, all these guys are platinum artists. And it's like, it was a smooth transition because it wasn't like this hard reset of, no, we're not, now it's just this. So there's still space for us. And we're not like this old played out thing.
Like if you pick up the phone and call them, they'll probably pick up. Like there's a mutual respect.
Probably so. Yeah, like, you know, when we see them out and about, it's like, yo, what's good? You know, what you up to? Blah, 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 blah. And it's not a get them out of here, go get my caviar.
Well, you must be excited little brothers getting back together.
Yeah, that's a trip. I just don't know. I told myself I don't want to expect anything because I don't know what it's going to sound like. If it sounds like,
it'll be more like the get back than the listening. Like, you know, cause Ninth isn't a part of the reunion this time around. And I think he and Fonte both understood what they'd done because of their personal hangups, whatever it might be. I think they felt like they did hip hop a big disservice, you know? So, if you have a personal behind the scenes beef with Don Will, that you ever think that, hey, this is bigger than us two. This is going to directly affect both of our careers, deprive the community of good music. And that's kind of heavy, man. And you know, Ninth Wonder probably carried that weight himself on his shoulders.
And yeah, I mean, like just, you know, being cool with all these guys individually through, you know, it was such a blow because they kicked the door down for guys like us. Like, you know, none of us reinvented the wheel. Of course, we all come from like Native Tongues, but they like, it was a new door that they kicked down. it was tough. And I've spoken to all of them, like the whole damn crew, management and all, on separate occasions, just trying to figure out, man, what happened? And you know, a lot of it, just, you know, your friends, it's like they say, you know, when somebody that's really your friend does something small, it like hurts a little bit more because that's really your friend. You know what I mean? So it was just a lot of little things, and everybody being younger, and I don't know any heavy details, but just, you know, just little things like, you know, if Don and I get into something, like if Don asked me to do a solo show with him or something, and I wasn't to show up versus just some guy he's worked with before, it's offensive if I don't do it because that's my friend. And like, you know, just miscommunications and stuff like that, and just being young. But when, you know, when everybody was able to come back together, like even down to like them going separate ways now, I totally understand it. It's not no money grab. It's not any of that. It's just like Don and I with Ilyash. You know, we didn't get to the same heights as a trio, but we all understand, myself and Don, we ran with the flag together and morphed into this new chemistry together. And that's what Pooh and Fonte did. So whether, you know, Nike has tracks on it or not, or whatever they end up doing, I do expect it to be more like Get Back, because I think it would be great. Because I love Get Back. And now, nigga, I'm spitting this shit. I got on a raspberry colored mock neck and some guava juice cologne. Oh, chances are I raised the bar. Never first at the finish, but here I are. Niggas getting out of hand till I raised the bar. Yeah, I took a few lumps. I don't easily scar. And after number two, I'm excited. I just want to see what they're gonna do, whatever they end up doing. Or they might, man, they might. Who knows what they'll end up doing? But I'm in. Whatever they do, sign me up.
No, I'm in agreement, man. And I didn't want to dwell on the OK Player stuff too much because that's all well documented. But I was curious, like in grade school growing up, you know, hip hop lyricism, I'm sure, was always a part of you. What I was curious about was like what happened to you when you transitioned from like, like acting out in class, being a class clown, wilding out, to just being this quiet, focused dude, using that energy to focus on rapping, focus on songwriting, which, you know, is very rare for someone who's like 14 or 15.
Just puberty, I guess.
Like the summer hit and you just came back to school, like different person, like just tunnel focus.
just refocusing my energy. And like, I guess that brand, you know, everybody talk about wokeness and stuff now.
that word triggers me.
Yeah. it was that brand, my hitting 14, 15 and saying, wait a minute, this is my life. I live in this rough neighborhood. I have friends that are doing certain things to survive. I have people that are no longer here over silly reasons. And it's just a lot of not just being my parents' kid, but developing my own life. Shit got real, for lack of a better term. And it just was like, how do I channel that angst, frustration, that reality slapped me in the face of like, I'm not going to grow up and be Fresh Prince. I'm not going to grow up and be Michael Jordan, whoever, like I'm this kid. And that's why I love Jay-Z so much, because we're from the same area. He's from Marcy. I'm from Sumner Project. And it's like, before he came out, there was no hope to like, you're going to do this and become this piece of success.
Were his rhymes accurate? Like if he in the 90s, he was painting us a pretty grimy picture of the area that you both grew up in. Was that all pretty accurate?
Yes, it was. It's funny. I talked to Don about it, and Don, you know, being from Cincinnati, he's like, man, it just seemed like y'all were like on the set of a real movie. Like it was real, but he couldn't picture it. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't a real thing. It's like if you watch movies about, I don't know, if you watch some movie about Venice, Italy, and you see it, it's like, that can't be, it really can't be like the streets are just water. That's not real, but it is real. And then he got here, he's like, yo, this really is the train station. The bodega really does look like that. Like everything is, you knew it was a real thing, but he couldn't touch it. With me, it was like, it's just my day to day. Almost to the point I didn't appreciate, like when I heard, remember I heard Biggie's Ready to Die and they robbed the train. And I know some guys that went to jail for trying to rob a McDonald's. And I was like, oh man, maybe they should have tried to rob the train instead. Just like it wasn't like yeah. I'm sure they made that. And let's say when Don heard Ready to Die, he was like, oh my God, robbing the train. But I was like, damn, maybe that was a better idea.
Well, same here, because I'm from Texas, and like mm-hmm. I feel for Don Will, because the only person that was talking about Ohio was Bow Wow back mm-hmm. in the day. So, oh, you have Bow Wow repping Ohio, but you know, you get Jay-Z, you have the greats that can paint a picture of your area for the world. And you know, so I was like, oh my God, the only way I know about Columbus and Cincinnati is Bow Wow. Like, come on.
Bow Wow, like even Bone Thugs, but they weren't in Cincinnati. I hope I don't get in trouble with Cincinnati for this, but I can't think of what rappers were from Cincinnati at the time before. Like,
yeah.
Cincinnati, I apologize. I know I'm slipping, and I know y'all have plenty of like legends, but I'll try to think of like rappers. I just can't think of them right now. Yeah. But yeah, man. So it just was like, you know, this is what am I going to do with my life? I need some kind of, I don't want to sound hopeless, because I'm not saying we all were hopeless, but we just didn't have a plan. And that's why everybody was selling drugs. Everybody was trying to come up with a hustle or scheme, because that's what was real to us. And I was like, well, I don't want to do that, because I know I'm not trying to get locked up. What can I do? And I was so into music, I just went that route and started DJing. I started DJing in 96. From 96 to like 2005, I mostly DJed, like just the neighborhood. They would bring me in for like baby showers and stuff like that. I wasn't really doing like the nighttime house parties, because my boy Mike, rest in peace, that was him. Like he controlled every nighttime house party in my neighborhood. So until he passed away he was murdered in 2001. But he had everything on lock. So it was me with the daytime stuff, him with the nighttime parties. And I did that until I got into, got on OK Player and met Fonte through OK Player. And he was doing music with his producer, Eccentric. And Eccentric pretty much showed me how you could do stuff on a computer without an MPC, without an SP, blah, blah, blah. They were using something called Hammerhead back then, Eccentric. Ninth Wonder, Crisis, whoever else was doing production back then, like around the year 2000, 2001. And I just was, I don't even think it was Google at the time. This is how old we are. I don't even think it was Google. There was something, whatever it was, I might have Yahooed and ran into Fruity Loops. And I didn't crack it or anything. I just had like the demo version. So I would make drum beats and Fruity Loops, and I had a 4-second sampler on my mixer. So I figured out like how to flip patterns with my 4-second sampler on my mixer while I had the drums going in Fruity Loops, and I had it mic'd up to like a whole different recorder. So this was going, it wasn't internal. This was all like the recorder was just catching two different speakers into this recorder. And that's how I was making beats, because I didn't know how to transfer stuff out of Fruity Loops and all of that. And I told Eccentric that's how I was doing it with this program I found called Fruity Loops. And he said, you know, that's a weird name, Fruity Loops. That sounds like cereal or something. What the hell is Fruity Loops?
Right.
He comes back a month later and he's like, yo, I got to introduce you to my boy Ninth. We started using that Fruity Loops joint. We figured it out. Man. Everything just changed. This Fruity Loops shit is amazing. And from there, I hit the ground running, which is still on my Bandcamp now. I did a project called The Beatmaker. And that was my first time really trying to take it seriously. The Beatmaker came out, and then we started working on Moonlighting around the same time. And that's when it got serious for real.
That's why I got so confused with the critical acclaim that Bandana is getting. It's just like, Ninth Wonder won a Grammy with a 5-year-old Fruity Loop beat that he gave Erykah Badu for Honey.
Yeah.
So tell me, Slim, what you want to do when no one in love with you. Third time gonna turn around. Love for you, but you can't define.
And everybody was looking down on it. Like Little Brothers Listening was 16 years ahead of its time.
He got so much crap over that. And now... I think the thing with Bandana, if it's like Madlib fans expect him to be using the what is it, the SP-303 all the time. So, which is, what is that, like $300, right, if I'm not mistaken? So that's even more, that's cheaper than a iPad. I think most people were just surprised that Madlib was using software more than just the idea of using it. I think that surprised Madlib was doing it.
It's a turning point because he was on Hot 97 the other day saying he wants to make millions now. And I think the J-Lib days are over. And it's fine. Like, he built his legacy.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Like, even when you said he was on Hot 97, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, the days of quiet Madlib in the corner just making beats, I think, is over. I think he's having a little bit of taste of the mainstream, and I think he's going to keep eating. That's my prediction.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, for somebody as prolific as him, he's given us enough of the grimy for like five people's careers. So if he went out and just became, I don't know, DJ Mustard. Well, I love DJ Mustard. It's not a diss, but you know, if he went out and became DJ Mustard or somebody, like, cool, man, because you still have like 200 albums I haven't heard yet. I've heard 300 of them, and I have to get to the other 200. So while you're doing that, I can't really complain about you going to make trap or whatever, or, you know, whatever he would, or maybe he could do like Primo and go do some pop music, but still have the same sound, same style. But, you know, I think, yeah, Knife was definitely ahead of his time with that because he was the only person willing to go out and say it. He could have easily... Even I remember this was, I hope I'm not blowing him up, but he started using the MPC at one point and didn't say anything. He wanted people to think it was still Fruity Loops. Cause he was like, he don't want it to be like, oh, they won. Y'all won. Okay, I give up. I'm gonna go get this MPC now. And so he had sent me a bunch, I don't remember what era, and I probably shouldn't say which era it was anyway. But yeah, it was during a time when people still assumed it was all still Fruity Loops, and he was on MPC. And it was, you know, nobody was the wiser.
Yeah, so. And it might be, and I guess the thing that I'm most impressed by is he's able to do this full time, even as underground as he wanted to be. And, you know, you were mentioning, you know, around 14, 15 and getting into college. You know, how am I going to sustain myself while I'm making music? Like, remember the guy off Cosby who got ridiculed for working at Trader Joe's? Like, I wonder, like, really wonder how many artists are out there pretending they do rap full time, but they aren't, like, a front. Like, it's okay for you to sell drugs while you're making music, but it's something to be ashamed of if you're trying to get a steady paycheck. A steady paycheck's a steady paycheck. And I, you know, if I order a Pizza Hut and Blue delivers a pizza to me, I'll close the door and be like, nah, that couldn't be him. But I'm pretty sure that happens from time to time, and it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah, I've been recognized at my job. I'm a supervisor at a retail store. I'm not going to say which one. If you know, you know. Like Pusha T said, if you know, you know. But, and I'm like, it might have been a week ago that somebody came up to me and was like, he walked out the store, walked back in, walked out, walked back in, walked out, came back with his phone, and had like Google image search up. I was like, yo.
Yeah. And I guarantee you there's hundreds of instances out there like that. And
yeah, and I was like, yo, what's, and I'm pretty sure he's just the first person to say something, because I know other people have, you know. I remember I was when I didn't have a job, when I was doing this full time, I was handing out flyers for some extra money one day, and Taz Arnold walked past me. And you know Taz Arnold, he's a flashy dude. He had on whatever super flashy outfit he had on. And he stopped and was like, yo, what's up, man? What's good? And I was like, chilling, man, just handing out these flyers. He's like, that's what's up. And it's like, you know, it is what it is. It definitely happens. And I look at it like, I would rather you see me like doing that to make money, and I come out with the right music when I'm ready to come out with the right music. Or, and I don't want to say this and insult anybody, because I've done it too. But like, you know, see me on Twitter or whatever, like, I'll give you 5 beats today for $100. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Like, yo, anybody hit me up, and I do a verse right now. Hit me up. People do that, and it's fine. But I'd rather just go to the 9 to 5 personally. I mean, and like I said, I've done that before, and it's, it's been fine, and it is a it's a quick way to make money. And I've been lucky enough to have been on. There's some people I've got, producers I've wanted to work with that I've been able to check off my wish list. I've worked with them through people just hitting me up, paying me to rhyme for to do a verse. People I wanted to work with for years and never got to until somebody else paid them and then paid me to do this song, you know?
When I hear Madlib saying he wants millions, I'm sure it's not to buy a Bugatti. It's just so he can be worry-free and just focus on the music.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah. That's what I gather from it.
It was a DJ Quick album. Which one was it? It was after he was working with Dr. Dre and they did The Truth Hurts. And in the credits, he was like, I want to thank Dr. Dre for making it so I never have to get a regular job again.
He breaks me down. He built me up. He built my cup. I like.
And I was like, here's a dude that's been platinum, has been on Arista, what have you. And, you know, whatever circumstances led to, he must have been at Best Buy or Guitar Center or somewhere working. And he's quick, and I'm not quick. So it's like, you know, it comes down to, and on the flip side, Don is still full-time. Don is a full-time artist. He does all kinds of crazy stuff, and it ain't even vicariously for him. It's just, I see him doing stuff, and I'm like, ah, that's so cool that you're doing that. That's so dope that you're doing that. Sometimes I was like, ah, man, I wish I was there. But I wish I was there as your homeboy just chilling with a drink in my hand. It's not even like, I should be there as Von P. It's like, I wish I was there at my boy's party. He's DJing with Mick and DJ Parlay right now. Or he's DJing in the Hamptons or somewhere crazy or whatever. You know, all the crazy stuff he does now. I be wanting to go and be a patron at the joint more than anything, and sometimes he calls me to do music for HBO or what have you, and it just don't be consistent enough for me, so I still do that stuff and get those checks and all of that, but I just didn't at the time. I didn't love doing it full time, also for social reasons. It made me extra socially awkward when I would just be alone doing music all day.
So you wouldn't shy away from a Dr. Dre opportunity? Like, I remember Pimp C said he didn't want to be in the Jay-Z Big Pimpin'. Like, he didn't want to do that. He just didn't want to be mainstream. He just felt like that was selling out. But DJ Quick could do one track with Dr. Dre and be set for life. Is there any shame in that game? Like, what's your feelings on that?
I wouldn't want to be famous. Not at all. Because, I really enjoy, like, the people that know me. I think that's super cool. Like I said, the dude the other day that was like, yo, I know who you are. Or even sometimes it'll be people. I've done stuff where I'll be like, I went to take my wife's car to get fixed. And after it was done, dude was like, yo, I just want you to know, me and my boy that work here, man, we love Tanya Morgan, yo. Like, we love y'all shit, man. It's crazy that we got to, you know, work on your car today.
Did you get a discount?
Did I?
That's good enough then, yeah.
I may have. Because, you know, again, going back to being socially weird, I think I was like, ah, oh, thanks, man, and kind of, like, just left. Because I was, like, I was being awkward about it. Because, you know, we are just still normal as hell. So I think I was like, ah, oh, thanks, man, I appreciate it. So I may have, I don't know. Maybe I did and didn't notice. I've done that stuff before where people have like hooked me up and was like, I'm a fan. And I just was like, didn't know how to be cool about it. I didn't know how to walk away cool or whatever. So it's like, ah, thanks. Thank you. And just like kind of darted out.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I love about you too is it's not that I don't know if fame changes people, but if you look at Drake and you listen to Comeback Season, you listen to Scorpion, it doesn't sound the same. And it's got to be because he's doing 90 dates a year and he can't go out in public and all these producers are sending him 1,000 beats. I like that you're in that sweet spot that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I would so hate that, man. I mean, I'm still, I've been a fan of his since back then, and I'm still a fan. but I would hate to be on that level. Shout out to 88 Keys. Like, we'll be somewhere out and he's like, he'll get stopped and be like, oh man, you know, you're 88 Keys and this and that. And he'll try to be like, yeah, this is Von P. And they're like, oh, I don't know him. And it's like, no, that's perfectly fine. Trust me. Yeah. You know, because I think it's better that way. But yeah, if I ever got that kind of opportunity and it put me in a situation where I was, you know, set for just a long time and not even just life, I would probably still keep my gig just part time because I like going somewhere and being a part of the day to day. Not like, I don't like being in the bubble of, I spent a lot of time in that bubble. And when you get out of it, even if you weren't, I don't think I was ever super like gassed or whatever, but there's certain things you can't avoid. You just can't avoid it. And then I see people now, like a lot of people I know, my colleagues that are still in it. And, you know, they're not bad people or anything, but it's just certain little things that they do or feel they can't do. And I'm like, you could do that. You could go there. You could do this thing. You could do that. I mean, and I'm being really vague, but it says you see people that like kind of isolate themselves too. And some of it is because they think or they know they're going to get bothered a lot. And some of it is just they are alone so much that they just forget how to really be in the mix.
Well, I mean, this is going to be a weird segue because we're talking about anti-fame, but I feel like if this podcast ended tomorrow, I'd be a happy man as I got one of my all-time favorite people on. I just want to thank you for your time, your wisdom, your music, and the whole nine, man.
Man, thank you. Thank you. For real. I really do appreciate it. Yeah. For real.
That means the world to me, man. But before we get out of here, I would be very remiss if we didn't talk about Don Will's new album that comes on the 19th. It was interesting for me.
Yeah, we have to.
He said it's his most personal album ever, and it's kind of like reuniting with you to take care of all the production. So, you know, I'm going to let you have the floor to kind of tell us what that means, because a personal project, that's big.
Well, first of all, that wouldn't be my brother if I didn't clown him for saying it's my most personal project to date.
Was that a PR line, I guess?
No. I mean, it is, but it's just, you know, people say that. Yeah. So even when you mean it, it just sounds funny. You know, I really locked in and I went back to, I kept it humble and went back to the neighborhood. Yeah. But yeah, Don's record, One Word, No Spaces. Around the time we started, see, the thing we always do, our secret to like, our secret to why I feel like we do good albums is we never make one at a time. And we still had made that reiteration album. So we sat down to try to start making it again. And we were listening to the old, like the stuff from like 2004. And I was like, dude, we are not these people anymore at all. He's like, I'm not this dude at all anymore. The stuff we was talking about, the way my stuff beat sounded back then. It's like, we can't go in and try to recreate 2004 and 2018. That just doesn't work. So what we did, I just for 2018, I said everything I make is yours, everything. Not even mine. Like, I make something that I love, I'm gonna send it to you and hope you don't pick it, because it's everything is yours. So that's what I did for the whole year, from the end of 2017 all throughout 2018. And he just was picking stuff. Like, even if I sent something to somebody else, I was like, oh, no, wait. I'm sticking to my rule. Everything is Don's. So, you know, I sent other people stuff and had to take it back. Don wanted it. We started doing the record, and it was headed down a certain direction. It was like it's him talking about his relationship with himself, like him, like a self-conflict, him versus himself record. So in some areas, it does get dark, and we were just in the green room listening to his record, and he's like, man, this whole shit is just sad. It's just a depressing gray.
Yeah.
And he's like, man, this just sounds like side B. So I said, okay, so we have to come up with something. We have to come up with side A. So I went home and I made a beat tape called Side A Beat Tape. And that's where you got stuff like Laura's Song Part 2.
Women love the voice, women dig the lyrics. Women digging in the crates, what is daddy flipping? My woman flipped the pancake, dancing in the kitchen. Her kitchen isn't itching, it's expensive ass conditioner. If any women smitten by my spitting sister, listen. Back in my day, war demolition. Now I'm all the way musician, here's an autograph, a picture. I see all that ass, I get you, but I'm richer when I'm with her. My God,
this
ain't
song.
A girl song.
And some of the other, like Lover's Song 2, it came out already. That song is available. So that was something like a little bit brighter. We just started doing more stuff like that. So he took all of that, and then he actually took the album away from me at one point. And he produced it as much as I did, because I was doing the beats and we were putting it together. We put it together the same way we do a Tanya Morgan record. We both come with the concept. These are the beats, and we're working on it. But he was writing everything. And sometimes I was like, "Yo, take this beat and rap about a train. Compare your career to the subway." So then he made the song. I can't just hand this off to you. I remember he told me that, and I was on my way to the dentist that day. And I got to the dentist, and I was in physical pain, and my feelings was hurt. And then it was raining, then it just started storming, and I was listening to the demos, and I was like, oh man, I just lost my job doing Don's album. He gonna take this shit away from me. This gonna be like Questlove and B. Like I thought we was doing, like before Kanye stepped in on B, they were doing another album, and then it became Common and Kanye. I don't know if that's a well-known story, but you know, he was still working with Quest, and then Kanye stepped in. And I was like, man, you know, he's gonna go take it, and somebody else gonna do the album now. And my side of my face is swollen from the dentist. Oh, I'm having the worst day ever. And then he came back and was like, no, you're still doing the record. I just need to produce it more too with you. Like, I need to, these sessions, I need your stems, and I need to figure out what I want to do and how I want this to sound. And there are things I want to change, this part and that part. And there's a song I did with Theory Has It, and I want this to be, although I didn't make the beat for the last song on the album, he was like, it's important that this song goes up there too. And then I was like, okay, I was, maybe some of that was ego, I said it was hurt feelings, but I was like, I'm turning this into what I want to do to his album, but this is his album, it's not my album. So I had to take my ego out of it and say, I'm helping him bring what he's trying to do to fruition. We're creating this together, and I should just be happy that somebody that I've worked with for 15 plus years realized that I'm the person to make such the personal record with him. Like, if it wasn't me, he would have had to have done this alone.
Yeah, for me, I can only speak for myself, but it's like, you got Don Will's album out, then you're coming out with yours, and then you got the next Tanya Morgan. So it's like, I can peek into the window of Don Will's mind and then yours, and then see how you guys come collectively to make a new body of work. And that's always exciting for me as a listener.
Thank you. And I can tell you what it is, that these albums, I hate that, you know, I just made fun of Don for saying this is most personal.
Is it your most personal?
No, but I'm going to say something else that's an artsy thing to say. The albums are about love. But they're not about love, boy-girl love, relationship, romantic love. It's like my album is like a breakup letter with my city. I made it for everybody, though. It's not just about me versus Brooklyn. It's everybody versus their hometown. Because, you know, you have so much gentrification going on, but you also have, when we travel around and, you know, we do these the type of hip hop we do, which we're not going to the stadium in your town. We're going to the town, we're at the pub, or we're at the venue that's in the small town next to the big city. And you get in these towns and you meet the people that always talk about how they hate their hometown. You know, like, you always hear that, those stories from those people. And then you get the people in the bigger cities about, oh man, you know, everything's changed so much. You know, the city, it's a Starbucks on every corner, blah, blah, blah. And everybody has the same story. So my album is called City for Sale. And it's about that. It's about that conflict of you're home, but you're not home. Whether you've never left and you just you fallen out of love with your home, or you left and came back from college, or you left and you look back at home and you don't recognize it anymore. I didn't want it to just be this Brooklyn, New York is gentrified and nowhere else kind of thing, because that I didn't want to have that kind of tunnel vision. So it's like a breakup story for everybody, but for their hometown. And the Tanya Morgan album is Dawn and Vaughn, and it's just like a brotherhood love. Like, it's like, we on our shit, we here. We not even trying to teach y'all nothing this time. we don't got no deep concept. It's just, it's Dawn and Vaughn with the homies. But I don't want to say reunion. It's not like an Ilias. It's not an album with Ilias. I don't want to give anybody the wrong idea. It's just this appreciative, it's just like an appreciative ass album. And we have a lot of it, and it sounds nice so far. Really excited, man.
All right, man. Well, I mean, that was a very like organic, interesting way on like how the album came to be. And, you know, I'm going to be on the edge of my seat waiting for the solo album, City for Sale. Well, there you have it, man. Bedroom Beethoven's Von P, man. Thanks, boss.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.